It is Monday, December 30th, 2019. I'm George Prentice in for Gemma Gaudette, and this is Idaho Matters. There was a bit of a pre-Christmas surprise from the Idaho Public Utilities Commission. The PUC has rejected a proposed settlement agreement that would have changed how solar power generators are paid for their power. By now, many of us have heard about net metering, and indeed, that's what we're talking about today. And the question at hand is, how much should net metering customers be reimbursed for the electricity that they produce and send back to the larger electrical grid? We want to afford you the opportunity, our listeners, to send us any questions or comments on net metering. Do that on Twitter and do it in the next couple of minutes. Use the hashtag Idaho Matters, hashtag Idaho Matters on Twitter. Send us a comment or a question, and we'll fold that into our conversation. If there are two people who can explain all of this best, indeed, they are the two gentlemen who join us live in studio. Daryl Anderson is the president and chief executive officer of Idaho Power, and Ben Otto is the energy efficiency associate with the Idaho Conservation League. Gentlemen, thank you and welcome.
Great. Great to be here, George. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
And happy holidays.
And happy holidays to you.
Right up front, we need to acknowledge that most customers do not produce their own solar energy. That said, I think many of us are intrigued by the possibility. We understand rooftop solar technology, but I'm hoping between the two of you, you can simplify the process of net metering for us.
Sure. So, George, I'll start, and I think Ben can add, and I'm sure, because Ben has been actively involved in these efforts for quite some time. And from in its simplest form, George, is that if a customer decides they want to go ahead and do self-generation, mm-hmm. so they decide what kind of that looks like, and a lot of times right now it's solar. Someone decides to put a solar array on their house, they will generate electricity. So they likely will use a lot of that electricity and for their own use. Now, to the extent they don't use all of that electricity, then they have the opportunity then to sell back that energy back to the utility company, in our case, Idaho Power, and get a credit for that. And one of the big questions is, what is that credit worth?
Ben?
Yeah, that's right. So Mr. Anderson described there's basically two ways that you find value from putting solar or on your house. A couple people have wind turbines, small wind turbines, but it's mostly solar these days. So that's the savings on your power bill you can use to pay back the company that installed your system, and then the credits. And those are both distinct places to find some value, and the commission and the conversation we've been having actually over several years about this policy has looked at those two places to try to find the right answer. What's this thing worth to the homeowner? What's it worth to the rest of the system?
And there's very specific technology that manages this or calculates this, yes?
You're right. So, yeah, so the energy itself gets measured by a meter. Mm-hmm. And so,
and just FYI, is that meter owned by the user?
No, the meter in this our cases
that's
is
an Idaho Power.
Idaho Power owned okay. meter, which capture, they're called smart meters today, so they capture a lot of information, not only just usage, but another number of other things. And so In that particular case, the information is captured. You can tell when the energy is being utilized on site, and then when it's getting pushed back onto the system. And that's been one of Idaho Power's contention all along: is how do we ensure what is the right value proposition back to the owner of that energy generation site? And that's the question.
Does the user have any say as far as how much would go back into the system?
Well, really, basically on what it is that they are using. I mean, okay. What's not being used, then will get pushed back onto the system.
Okay, so it goes into the system, and obviously then in the billing,
right.
It takes up obviously what they've used, right. And then there is the net.
Right, there's a net amount. And that's right. one of the contentious pieces of the discussion throughout the net metering discussion is, how should that be measured? Should it be measured on the hour, every 15 minutes, or should it be measured out by the month?
How is it measured now?
Today it's measured, it's net basis by the month.
Okay.
And so what you use versus what you generate, it nets, and then that's your net either utilization or credit back to the system. I just say, or just from that standpoint, is the question that gets raised is, that you as a customer, you are using what I'm going to call the grid. That's all the infrastructure that makes energy happen. And so are you And are you paying the right fee to use the grid? And that's one of the other pieces of contention that was debated in this ongoing discussion around net metering. There's a lot of debate about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a really – you've honed in on one of the key principles that we've talked about both in the case and over the years is the meter on your house is kind of an interesting point in this process. You have your side of the meter, which is where you do whatever you do, run your dishwasher, your washing machine, those types of things. And then you have Idaho Power's side of the meter, and that's where you connect to the rest of the grid. And, we talked about this some, but the interesting thing with solar or any kind of net metering is when you push that back out onto the grid, you're using the grid, you know, the line that goes from your house up to the transformer on the telephone pole and then the wires down the street. But that's a useful product that Idaho Power can use that energy and supply your neighbor. Supply somebody else on your street, and that avoids maybe having to generate that same amount of power out at a distant power plant. And so that's the real hard part is what is the right pricing to use the system, but also what value is being provided by somebody generating something really locally and it flowing into their neighbor and avoiding some other costs.
So as far as the pricing, I want to make sure I get this right. A proposed settlement was looking to cut the reimbursement rate of nearly 10 cents per kilowatt produced to around 4.4 cents per kilowatt hour over the course of about a decade.
8 years, right? Yeah, so the way that I think
that's
what people –
That's a significant drop, though.
It is, but let's break that apart a little mm-hmm. bit. So the rate structure we have in place today – that the customers pay includes a cost of energy and then the fixed costs associated with the system that we talked about, the grid. And that's really becomes the sticking point. So if I'm a net metering customer today mm-hmm. and I'm getting a credit, say, let's say for sake of easiness, 10 cents, that 10 cents includes not only the cost of energy, which we would argue is not 10 cents, and then you also have the fixed cost. We think that number is somewhere, energy value is somewhere around 3 to 4 cents in a good day. And as a data point for that is we just signed and the commission just approved on Christmas Eve a new contract with Jackpot Solar.
Jackpot Solar. Right.
Right. And the value of that energy, the beginning price of that energy is 2 cents, 2.1 cents. So that's a marker that we should at least consider as to what is the value of the energy back to the rest of our 560,000 customers.
Can we talk a little bit about value? I'm going to assume that both of you advocate, you are fans of net metering, yes?
I'm a fan of net metering.
I support net metering as long as the structure is set up such that there's a subsidy that doesn't take place to the rest of the customers.
Right. And I think that's where the road
absolutely
really meets
is
subsidy, value, whatever we call it. But is there an argument to say that those people who are producing and are net metering, that they should also be beneficiaries of moving us all toward renewables?
Well, George, the way I think about this is we – at the Conservation League and those of us supporting clean energy, I also think a lot about two kind of model customers I keep in my mind. My grandma and then a young family, you know, who's just trying to put food on the table. They want clean air. They want a stable climate. They want to enjoy Idaho, but they also need to pay their power bill. And so we're trying to find not a subsidy, but what is the fair and accurate pricing for either both sides of that equation. And I think that's really important. Going back to Daryl's example of Jackpot Solar, which is a great project, very low cost, maybe the lowest cost solar in the country. It's here in Idaho. It's just near Rogerson, so we're going to get some interesting economic development from that. You get a tax base. You get some workers down there. But that's still energy produced way down there that has to flow through the rest of the wires to the customers for people to consume. So what you're using in your house, it's more. It costs more than just $2 or $21 a megawatt hour to get it there. Mm-hmm. And that's where we really want to – the question gets much more complicated. So you can have cheap solar coming out of the desert, but you got to get to somebody's house. You can also have solar on somebody's house flowing to their neighbors. And that's where the math gets really hard. But the core in that is finding the really accurate and fair value so that people can afford their bills but still have the clean energy that we want.
George, can I go back to the 8 cent number? Because I think what's important to note, too, is that what was agreed to in the settlement was a graduated reduction in the price, but not necessarily cast in stone, because it was going to be subject to an every 2 year look to determine what is the appropriate value. So, yes, the initial reduction was going to be to around 8 cents from the current 10 cents. But that's still four times what I would argue the jackpot solar number is coming in at. So there is a number out there. The 4 cent number that we had talked about, I think that was in the settlement agreement, was a compromise. I mean, it wasn't what either anybody necessarily in the settlement discussions wanted, but it was a compromise to try to be able to move the issue forward.
And indeed, the settlement had some impressive participants. I want to make sure the Sierra Club, the City of Boise, the Idaho Clean Energy Association, and others. Yep. That's an impressive group.
Yeah, the City of Boise was really involved and did some good work.
Ben's group, obviously.
And our partners at Vote Solar. Yep. I mean, there were a lot of people involved. There were a lot of meetings. But I think we heard pretty clearly from the commission that they wanted to see more, and they wanted to see more public participation in some of these processes. And I think that'll be a really interesting thing going forward in the next year.
And I think part of the settlement, I mean, I would say when we look, I'm a glass half full person. So I look at what the commission came out with, and the one thing that they came out with was a grandfathering provision, supporting grandfathering. And we at Idaho Power are supportive of that. We didn't necessarily put it directly into the original settlement because there were some legal potential implications around it. But the commission came out in support of grandfathering. We are right behind the grandfathering piece. We're good with that. So I think that helps at least solve part of the issue, at least for the existing customers where they are today. And the commission is pretty clear in its order as to what happens now going forward as it relates to new customers. So that's the important part. People have made significant investments. We realize that. They've made big in dollar investments, and so should the rules get changed on them? I mean, and if the commission was pretty clear, no, the rules shouldn't change.
And indeed, in regards to the grandfathering, I want to make sure that I've got this right. According to Solar Energy Industries, there are more than 4,300 solar installations in Idaho. Does that sound about right?
Right. About 4,300 and probably another 700 pending.
And that provides about 3.5% of the state's power. Is that about right?
I can't confirm that number, but it seems high. But
it does seem a little bit high. It could be the percent produced in
again.
Our,
that's
in
according
our state,
to Solar Energies Importer. Industries right. Association. Yeah. Let's take a look at the 4,300, and that number is growing. Mr. Anderson, can you paint a word picture for us? Now we know that Idaho Power very clearly is committed to 100% clean energy by 2045.
We are
right.
Yeah, we are.
Can you paint a word picture for us maybe for 10 years from now? Do you have a sense of how robust solar energy technology might be in Idaho?
Well, I do hope. I think Ben and I were just talking before here that the pace of change, if we look back the last 10 years where we've been, and as we look forward for the next 10 years, I think the pace of change is going to continue to ramp up. So I think the continued development of solar technology combined with storage. And I think that's the important factor is in bringing storage into the equation. And I think that you'll see maybe more of that on the larger scale applications. You just like the jackpot, maybe you add some solar there to enhance the value of that energy that's being produced there. Because if you can store it, then it's a lot easier to call upon it and dispatch it. That's one of the major factors today is being able to dispatch some of these intermittent resources.
So existing customers are grandfathered. What's next? It sounds as if, what, are you back to the table? Or is it going to be a number of more public, a series of more public hearings on December, I think, 3rd? Was it December 3rd that there were hours and hours of public testimony on this? Right. Sounds like the PUC says that's still not enough.
Yeah, this one of the clearest parts of the commission's order was laying out what their expectations of what the process and the answering this question of value is going to look like going forward. Because we still need to figure this out. It's we have a marker in time right now of, hey, existing customers, you get to keep your deal. Mm. But there's still some uncertainty about what the future policy is going to look like. And the commission said, one, they really wanted to see a lot more public participation. So the stakeholders are going to have to get together in the beginning of the year and come up with a plan that we can say, hey, there's a lot of questions to answer. Here's a method to go through that. We'll go to the public and say, what do you want to have answered? What are your concerns? The commission will then rule on that design of the study. And then these are complicated technical things. So you have to get some experts in and work through the math. There'll be another round of public participation on the results of this study of value. And that will be a marker in time, and then we'll sit down and say, okay, now what do we want to do about it?
This is months.
I think it's months and maybe longer, I think, yeah. Depending. If you think about where we've been, we had, just through the settlement process, there were 8 meetings. And prior to that, there had been a lot of different meetings, workshops. We had focus groups. We've had a lot of input on this on this issue, and I think the hearings you mentioned, George, as it relates to the feedback to the commission, not unexpected. If you think about, you know, we have almost 5,000 net metering customers today, and yes, you had maybe 20% of those folks show up either on the call or in comments or in person. Yeah, and they were very adamant, very livid about their experiences. They don't want to change the rules. That some of them had made significant investments. I listened to those proceedings. And yes, they are heart-wrenching stories. But we also have another 560,000 customers out there that we also have to focus on. And so we have to look at them all in totality. And so I think it's great that we have a grandfathering provision in there. And like Ben said, I think we need to get back together and work forward. I think it's going to be harder to reach a settlement. I will tell you that right now, just because of the process that we just went through and sort of got said, let's go back to the drawing board. But maybe we have to go the full case in this next go around with all the public input to do that. But yeah, it was loud and clear. The commission said they want more input. And so that's part of the regulatory process is we get orders from time to time that then we have to go back and look at and decide how we're going to deal with those. And we're still actually in the middle of digesting the order, if you can imagine. I mean, there's a lot in that order, even though it's only like 15 pages. There's a lot in there, and we are in the process of doing that. But like Ben said, I think after the first of the year, you'll likely see some things start anew.
He is Daryl Anderson, President and CEO of Idaho Power, and Ben Otto from the Idaho Conservation League. Gentlemen, thank you so very much for simplifying it. I really do appreciate that. That said, my goodness, do you have your work cut out for you.
George, I just wanted to give your listeners one tidbit of good things that have been going on in the energy industry. Tomorrow will be the last day that we'll be in Unit 1 of our Valmy coal plant. And so that's 125 megawatts of coal that goes by the wayside. And at the end of next year, we'll have another 60 megawatts.
And that's a landmark.
That is landmark. Yep. So just wanted to make sure they know that.
Gentlemen, thank you so very much. This is Idaho Matters on a Monday. Up next, we're talking dating with a woman who we only know as anonymously single.